Okay, good morning, everyone. We are live. Welcome to Insights into the Weekly Parsha, Parshas Shalach. We have an action-packed Parsha. For those of you who would like to follow inside with me, our Parsha begins in the Art Scroll Blue Stone Chumash, page 798, in the Hebrew, page 799. Before we get started, we have three generous sponsors this morning. Let me welcome those who are here with us live, those who are with us via the Boca Jewish Center Zoom room, and those who are joining us through our live stream, Facebook Live. Wonderful to be able to learn Torah together as we get ready for Shabbos Kodesh. So the first sponsor this morning, anonymously, in honor of all the graduates this year graduated in our community, going on to the next and higher level of education. Mazel tov to your families. Thank you so much to our generous sponsors. A very special welcome back, our generous sponsor, to welcome back Chef Mayer to our shul, making coffee every single morning for our morning minyanim. So great to have our beloved Buchenwald survivor doing what he does best, making sure that we are well-fed, nourished, giving a cup of coffee, a cup of joe in the morning to be able to learn, to daven, but to see him alive and happy and doing what he does best. Thank you for that sponsorship. And finally, we have a very special mazel tov and shul this morning. Ariel Iger put on his tefillin for the very first time, laying beautifully. His bar mitzvah is this coming Shabbos. A very special mazel tov to the entire Iger family. Mazel tov Ariel on the Bobayom yesterday. Your family should have lots and lots of nachas. Thank you for the generous sponsorship as well. So our learning this morning, Parshas Shalach. We have a lot to do, a lot to discuss, a lot to be inspired in how we can have application of practical usage of the timely lessons that are lessons for our life, lessons for living. So the drama unfolds rather quickly. Here we find ourselves juxtaposed from the end of Parshas B'Shalach, Parshas Ba'alosla rather. Now we are beginning of Parshas Shalach. The Meraglim, the spies, they return from the reconnaissance mission to the land of Israel. They come to Eretz Yisrael, and now they come with what we hope is going to be a report of positive. Look, we can go into the land, we can settle into the land of Canaan. The destiny, the narrative of the Jewish people, it's happening. It's in our moment. This is the time. This is the place. This is the space. This is our opportunity. But unfortunately, that was not meant to be. They come back from their mission from Eretz Yisrael to the people, and they give the disastrous report. V'sapru lo v'yomru bonu el ha'oretz asher shalachnu v'gam zavas chalav u'davash hi v'zepiri. You should know, it starts off pretty good. This is the land that you, Moshe Rabbeinu, you sent us to. It flows with milk and honey, like we like to say, Eretz Zavat Chalav U'Davash. It's a land that's exquisite, a land that flows with milk and honey. And this, Mizeh Pirya, this is what it has therein. You have to understand, this is the fruit. And look, what it seems to be, what we're hoping to be, this is glorious. However, this one word, Ephes, the but, however, and this is where things go downhill and go downhill in a hurry. Verse number 28. You should know that the people that are inhabiting the land, they're telling the people they're mighty, they're strong, the cities, they're huge, the cities are fortified, the cities are what seem to be dangerous. And there's even, you should know, we saw the offspring of a giant. We saw this giant there, it's there, the offspring of a giant, so therefore, you know, it's a place that we just cannot inhabit, it's a place that we cannot go. Amalekites are there, the Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites, the mountainous region, that's where they stand, and V'Kanani Yoshev Alayam V'Al Yad Yarden. You should know, the Canaanites, even themselves, they're mighty warriors, the people that we're not going to be able to stand against. These are people that are going to fight us in a strength that's not to be able to be matched. They stand alongside the Yarden, along the Jordan, and you should understand what that means. Since, Rashi tells it, since the Jewish people had already been burnt by Amalek, as it were, the spies mentioned it in order to frighten them. Medrash Tanchuma tells us that, you know, when you want to scare somebody, you want to frighten somebody, you know what you do is you remind them of the most frightening moment. And the frightening moment that they had was with Amalek. Of course, no, as we will read in Parshas Kisetse, at the end of Parshas Kisetse, we had in Parshas Bishalach. Of course, we know the strength and the mighty, powerful battle that we wrote with the raging war that we had with Amalek. So therefore, they are mentioning something that's going to frighten the people. It wasn't to encourage them. It wasn't to say, Amalek, the Hittites, the Jebusites, the Canaanites are there. Don't worry. We have a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Onu Hashem, we have a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, these guys, they don't stand a chance. No. The reason why specifically they were told about Amalek's presence is there should be a pachad, there should be a fear, there should be a trembling, there should be a trepidation. That's what it was. So therefore, that's the report. It goes down fast. Pasuk Lamed, Pasuk 30. Vayos Kolev Esa Amil Moshe Kolev Ben Yefuneh. And of course, Yehoshua ben Nun, but Kalev, in this instance, he silences the people. The Yos, he silences them. He says, one second, no. What does he say? Now it's interesting, El Moshe, towards Moshe, because he was talking to Moshe, which seems to be in a little bit of a strengthened, harshed way. Why? Because if it's a harsh way, then the people are going to listen. Oh, these people are going to now challenge Moshe Rabbeinu's leadership. There are people that like to, and unfortunately, regularly challenge the leadership of authority. So now, these people were very into that. Now, if Kalev is going to silence the people to hear about Moshe, to hear about, oh, you want to send us to Israel, this is the land that's going to be for our people, and this is the type of terrain that we're going to encounter. No. So what happens? So Kalev silences them. El Moshe, Vayomer, Olo, Ne'alav, you should know that we are a people that we can surely go up. We can take possession of it. V'yarashno isak yachol nuchal lo. These are the words that are the most important words of our class this morning. Ki yachol nuchal lo. We can indeed overcome it. We can for sure take it. And these words are very essential because we have to understand what it means when the words tell us, ki yachol nuchal lo. What is it that Kalev is saying? And what is it, more importantly, that he's not saying? And understanding what it is that he's not saying will help us have a very great Gewaldige perspective as to how to deal with challenges and how to deal with roadblocks and how to deal with situations that present themselves that sometimes we feel that we're just not able to overcome. We're just not able to just walk through that impasse. We just feel stuck. So we have to understand what these words, Oisa ki yachol nuchal la, Kalev says to the people, we can for sure do it. What do the people say, though, before we get to what that means? Va'anoshim asher oluimo, you should know, but the men who went up with him said, no. There was a group of people. They're all gathered. It's Kalev and the others, the Meraglim, the other spies. So they said, no. You think that we can go and take care of those guys? You think that we're going to be able to handle that terrain, the big cities, the fortified walls? You think we're going to be able to handle the descendants of a giant? What did they say? Amru lo nuchal la'alos el ha'am ki chazak hu mimenu. We can't go. We can't defeat them. We're not going to be able to beat them. They're stronger than we are. We're not going to be able to be victorious. And therefore, we have to understand that this is the battle between Kalev and Yehoshua and the rest of the people, but specifically in this context, between Kalev and the people. Kalev saying, no, if we want to do it, we could do it. The other people saying, no, we can't do it. They're stronger than us. Here's the battle. The people, Klal Yisrael, are watching this conversation. Of course, we know what happens with these next just few words, a few sentences. The Meraglim created a storm of panic. They create a storm of anxiety. There's a huge amount of fear. They evoke the name of Amalek, and they scare with huge trepidation the Jewish people, the newly fledgling people. They want to go to Israel, and now they're terrified. So with this negative report about the dream that had guided our people since the times of Avraham Avinu was in peril of collapsing, we want to go there. Imagine, lahavdil, you have a plan to go on a vacation, a place to go, a land that you're going to journey in, the frontier you're going to see, and you have everything set. You have so many, many weeks and months and years you're planning toward. Allah has come of a comma. This is the destiny, the narrative of the Jewish people. Avram Avinu, Abraham, our forefathers promised this land is our land. It's your land. It's our people's land. It's Arzeinu HaKadosha. The people have been for hundreds of years in servitude and bondage and slavery in Egypt. And now they're set free. They're now traveling the desert. And now they're all able to now enter into the land of Israel. And now this, we're going to stop. We're on the precipice of our salvation. We're on the precipice of our destiny. We're on the precipice of entering into our land. So when the world is happening, everything is like in this minute. You ever hear the phrase, the cookie is crumbling? The cookie is literally crumbling right before their face. One man, Kalev ben Yefuneh, in this instance, in this conversation, he tries to control. He tries to do, you know, what we call damage control. He doesn't know what to do. You know, when somebody says something, and it's Lashon Hara, for example, right? We have at the end of last week's parasha with Miriam and Lashon Hara and the laws of Lashon Hara. So the Gemara says, Maseches Ksuvos, that every limb, every sinew, every vein, every part of a person's body was created for a tachlis, for a purpose. So what's the purpose of this little lobe, the end of your ear, the earlobe? So the Gemara tells us that the purpose of the lobe is to be able to sneak it inside to the ear canal. If you hear somebody say a little bit of Lashon Hara, you sneak it right into your ear canal, and oh, I don't want to hear that. Or sometimes people like to say, Ani lo mikabel. I'm not mikabel. I don't accept the words you said. But here's the problem. By the time you get your fingers on your earlobe to stick it into your canal, probably more likely than not, you've already heard the Lashon Hara. You've already heard something you probably shouldn't have heard. If you walk around all day with Q-tips in your ears or your lobes in your ears, which is not the way we were created, then maybe you're off to a better start. But once you hear the Lashon Hara, once you hear the evil speech, so what are you supposed to do? Ani lo mekabel. What do you mean, not mekabel? You heard it. What does it mean, not mekabel? I'm not going to believe it. But unfortunately, most of us, if we're going to be brutally honest, we're very influenced by the things we see and certainly by the things we hear. Ah, nah, that restaurant isn't good. The restaurant, the service is bad. The pizza's a little crusty. And the sauce is a little bit spicy. And the sushi, the fish is, it's not fresh. So what happens if you go there? The first, you'll choose to go there. And you've already have a jaundiced perspective of that business, of that person, of that company, of that community. That reputation has already preceded itself. So what does it mean I'm not mekabel? That means that once the people were privy to this conversation, it wasn't happened b'chadri chador. It didn't happen in a private office. It didn't happen in a private room. It happened, the conversation happened in front of a lot of people. So if the conversation happened in front of a lot of people and the stakes were so high, now what's going to be? Once the people heard that there was a Molech's name mentioned, once the people heard that there's giants and the sons of giants and the daughters of giants, once they heard that the land is fortified and strong, how are the people then going to then move forward and then take over the land? They're terrified. They're nervous. Anilo mekabel, Kaliv is up against a lot. No, no, no. Lanu nuchala. We are able to do it. If we want to do it, we can do it. All right. You're going to give thousands of people. You have hundreds of thousands of people. You have a couple million people there that are part of this conversation. And they're overhearing this debate. Ayvei. So what's going to be? So one man, Kaliv, he tries to do some damage control. He tries to steady the people. He silences them and he says, Ki yachol nuchal lo. Bamidbar chapter 13, verse 30, says it in those words. We can do this. We can overcome this struggle. We can take our land. We can assume our destiny. Let's move forward. Don't listen to these guys. I thought you guys were friends. I thought you were on a reconnaissance mission together. No, 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 no. Lo achbadni. Lo yadayam omrim. I have no idea what these guys are saying. Don't listen to those dudes. Listen to me. Ki yachol nuchal lo. We are able to do it. It's an interesting response, though, if you think about it. What's this response? How are we to understand Kalev's response to the claims of the spies? Like, if you think about it, the spies, if you just take a step back for a minute, the spies, they had valid points. It's one thing if somebody says something that's sheker, right? It's raining outside. You say, it's not raining. It's a beautiful sunny day. It's sheker. It's not true. It's raining. What happens if somebody says something that's objectively true? Now, if you like or don't like the restaurant, that's subjective. I like it. You don't like it. I like Milchiks. You like Fleischiks. We don't have to necessarily agree on the style, the type, the taste. But what if there's something that's objectively true? What happens if there's just a valid point? You see, with the mistake of the spies, it's not that they said something that was untruthful. Perhaps some disagree with that. But it's not that they said something that was not truthful. The problem with the spies is they said something that could have been true, was true, but they didn't come into the conversation as a strategy, figuring out what's the best way forward. Here, what's the strategy that we need to do to come to the land? Okay, here are the challenges. You know, you have a military campaign. It's not like the military campaign consists of, okay, here's the enemy, here's the terrain, here's the topography. They're going to lay down their arms. They're going to sit there for us to now go into your land, and we're going to take it, and there's going to be a non-hostile takeover. That's not what happens. They're fortified. They have missiles and rockets. Some of them, they hide their rockets in places where civilian lives, Rahmana Latzlan, right? They force the Israeli Defense Forces to do things that we would never, ever imagine to do. We don't want to do. We give them leaflets. They should leave. They should be, you know, free from the response, but they choose not to because they hide their rockets in places of schools and hospitals and office buildings where people stay. What happens? There's a fortified, you know, antagonizer. And that antagonizer, we need a military strategy. Should we enter this way? Should we enter that way? Should we bomb them? Should we go on the ground? Should we do different types of intelligence? Should we take some, you know, intellectual property? Like, what should be? What should be? So the spies, they had some valid points. You know what would have been great if they would have said, you know what, Moshe Rabbeinu, we just came back from Eretz Yisrael. People are watching. Looks great, everybody. Looks great. Land is going to be gewaldig. Ah, gewaldig. Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm a little nervous about a couple things. And can we get a meeting in the back boardroom just to like get a little, you know, situation? Here's the fruit. Look at this big fruit. And these giants and these walls of cities. All right, we got this. But Moshe Rabbeinu, you're our manhig. You're our leader. Like, what's the strategy? Who's the minister of defense? Who's the statistician here? Who's the person who's in charge? Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm in charge. I got Aaron. He's the priest. I got a lot of Kohanim. I got some. And by the way, I got the general of all generals. I got Melech Malchei Hamlochim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We got this. Okay, you're right. What's our tachlis here? What's our purpose? What's our hishtadlus? What's our efforts? What's our energy? What are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to strategize? Go this way, go that way, deal with it this way, deal with it that way. What are we supposed to do? So that's what they should have done. What are their points? There are mighty nations that outnumber us, that can outfight us. It seems as if, like, okay, there's a lot of them. Okay, Moshe, we got 10 tanks, they got 300 tanks, right? We got bows and arrows, they got automatic rifles. So what do we do? Yes, the land is wonderful, flows with milk and honey, but how will it be that we're going to be able to overcome these challenges? We want to get there. We know it's the national narrative. We know that it's the destiny of the people. But what are we supposed to do? Like, how's this supposed to be? What is Kalev's response? Kalev does not say, oh, here's what we should do. What does Kalev say? Very simple. What does he say? We could do it. We could do it. He does not respond materially to the claims of the other tribal leaders. He doesn't say, no, your claim about the giants and your claim about the land and your claim about the city. No, we got the. He didn't have a military response. What does he say? Something that seems to be very, very basic, very simple. He says, no, we got this. We got this. So the question is like this. How did it, what kind of response is that? How did he think that by just simply saying, yeah, we can do it, without materially responding to the claims of the people, how did he expect to shift the tide and convince the people that they needed to and could and should enter Eretz Yisrael? Like, you would think that if somebody, you have a defense attorney, you have a prosecutor of the defense, they're standing and they're now this adjudication of this case, and they're trying to adjudicate what and who and what and how is going to be the outcome of this case. So they're going against each other. So the prosecutor says this, the defense attorney says this. Yeah, and if anybody here is a lawyer, and they're battling with each other, they're arguing, and they're saying, this is what's going to be. So the people are saying, we can't go because of this. So what would you think Kalev would do? Kalev would say, no, we can go because of this, that. But he doesn't say it. He says, we got this. We're good. People are like, we're good. Like, okay, so how are we good? Like, what's the plan? How did he expect the people, and once they're hearing this conversation, how did he expect things to change? So listen to this beautiful insight. The Piazetzner Rebbe of Kalonymous Kalman Shapiro, who died in 1943. So the Rebbe spent 3 years in the Warsaw Ghetto. It's a very important little bit of history to understand who the Piazetzner Rebbe was. And on Shabbos, every single Shabbos, what he would do is he would give rousing Divrei Torah. He would give to the people. You have to understand that in the 1940s, obviously everybody knows what happened and what was happening during the times. And he would, in the Warsaw Ghetto, give rousing Divrei Torah. And he would lift the spirits of the people. They were very broken. They knew what was happening. Their families were in disarray. The war was happening. They knew that there were things that were happening to our people. Now, the Divrei Torah that he shared, obviously it was on Shabbos, they didn't do this on Shabbos, but after Shabbos, they wrote down these Divrei Torah, and they put them in scraps of paper, and they buried these scraps of paper. You ever hear this before? They buried these scraps of paper in a canister inside the ghetto. They put them inside a canister inside the ghetto, and only after the war was this canister unearthed. They found it, and they compiled it, all of the writings and all of these teachings, of the Piazetzner Rebbe into a sefer. And the name of that sefer is called Eish Kodesh. There's actually a shul in Woodmere, the Heiliger Rav, Rabbi Moshe Weinberger is the Rav. He's a manig, he's a Rav of all of us. Yeah? So the name of his shul is the Eish Kodesh. And the Piazetzner Rebbe was a huge amount of influence to him, to that community, to all of us. And so therefore, this sefer is called the Eish Kodesh. And it's a collection, it's a pile of just the work that the Piazetzner Rebbe wrote, and it was compiled after it was found after the war, which is just extraordinary. So this is unbelievable. So on Shabbos, June 22nd, 1940, Parshas Shlach, the Rebbe addresses this very question. If the spies spoke with reason, saying that the people are aggressive and the cities are large and well-fortified, why did Kalev not enter into a debate with them? Why does he try to demolish their argument with reasoning? Like, tell me, like, give me some material. Why did he limit himself to the simple statement, we must go forth? Give me some details. So listen to what the Rebbe explains. He explains that Kalev ben Yefuda was teaching us a very important yesod, a very important lesson for us to always remember, that sometimes you have to believe that you can succeed even if you can't immediately see the path to success. You're not sure how it's going to work out. I might not have an answer for you how it's all going to play out. I don't know. You have a child who has a roadblock in school. You have a couple that has marital disarray. You have certain personal successes that you find are limited. You find certain spiritual roadblocks in your own personal communal life. There are certain things that you just feel you don't know how it's going to play out. But if you believe, says the Rebbe, that you are able to succeed, even you, if you can't immediately figure out how it's going, what are the details? What's the path? I'm not sure the specifics. You know that clearly it's obvious. God could have made this entire process much easier for all of us. Hashem could have struck fear into the hearts of the inhabitants of the land, right? They could have run cause of the runaway, let the Jewish people enter the land uninhabited. There should be there a peaceful, non-hostile takeover of the land. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have easily have driven out the Amalek and the Hittites. He could have caused the giants to kneel before the Jewish people. He could have caused this to happen very smooth. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God we're talking about here. God didn't want that to happen. But why not? Very simple. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to see the challenges that lie before us and to believe in him. And then to believe in ourselves, that once we believe in him, that we are able to then get to where we need to get to, believe in our destiny, believe in ourselves, in our role in fulfilling that destiny. Hashem specifically wanted us to see those challenges. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to face those challenges in order for us to believe in ourselves. Hashem wanted us to see the challenges and believe that we should and would and could overcome them. Of course, we're talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Go to the land of Israel. I promise you, Abraham, you, your descendants, the bris man of Isaac, the covenant of the parts, it means that your people, my people, the Jewish people, are going to inhabit the land. So if that's the promise, Kadosh Baruch Hu, here, where are the keys? I open the door. There's nobody here. You ever hear of the statement, the phrase, move-in condition? You like to buy a house. You don't want to have to renovate and knock it down and change walls and move the kitchen and do new plumbing. No. The best deal, even if it's a little bit more yoker, even if it's a little bit more expensive, I want move-in condition. Is it turnkey? Let the land of Israel that was promised to us, Baruch HaKadosh Baruch Hu, be turnkey. Let it be move-in condition. Let it be easy for us to just walk right in. Why not? Because this was something else. And this is something that we're going to always have to deal with and figure out. It's believing in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and it's believing in ourselves. This was an exercise in national development. It's an exercise in figuring out, what is it that my role is? What's my belief system? How am I able to develop myself to see how I'm able to overcome things, believe in it, even if I do not know how? What Kalev does not do is he does not really argue with the spies because he agrees with them maybe. Maybe he even agrees with their worries. Maybe he's concerned with them just like they're concerned. Maybe he's concerned with them just as well. His comments, their comments, his observations, their observations, maybe they're the exact same. Maybe they're the exact same thing. He does not argue with them. He agrees with them. He's worried like they're worried. He's worried just like they're worried. He's worried just as well. Thank you so much. You're such a sweet buddy. Thank you so much. Thank you. Just that. Thank you. So sweet. Perfect. Thank you. Mazel bracha. Mazel bracha. So we see that if this was just an exercise in national development, and if he really does truly believe everything, so what's going on? There are mighty nations. There are significant odds. There are many factors that are working against us. But always remember, says Kalev, ki yachol nuchal lo, that we can do it. How? Not so sure. I have no idea. I'm not entirely, privy to how we're going to do it. What's our strategy? I don't know. We got to discuss the strategy. We got to figure it out. But we have to approach this situation with one clear, indisputable reality. If we put our minds to it, if we believe in ourselves, if we believe in Hashem, and we learn to believe in one another, then we'll be successful. And that, says the Pesach Zetz Rebbe, is the sin of the spies. That's the Chet HaMeraglim. That they were unable to conjure up a vision of national salvation. They just couldn't figure out how this is all going to play out. And even though they couldn't figure out the details, like, okay, there's like a lot of good here. There's a lot of good stuff. This is God we're talking about. If God is behind us, then for sure we're going to be successful. They failed to conjure up a vision of national salvation. They were unable to see beyond the current situation, the current realities. They were only able to see what was right in front of their very eyes. You know how many people are like that? They surmise the totality in full of what the circumstance is just by what they see in front of them. Is that really what's this whole story? The whole story is just what you see in front of you. It's like the keyhole, limited keyhole mentality. If you look through a keyhole and you look through that little small little nugget, would you bet your bottom last dollar that everything in that room is what you see in that hole? Of course not. Second, you open up the door, you're like, oh my goodness, I didn't see that painting. I didn't see that couch. I didn't see that person. I didn't see that lamp. I didn't see that window. I didn't see the whole room. Except for there's way more to the story. We have limited vision. We have limited perspective. We don't see, when I was a child, my mother used to always say to me, I have eyes in the back of my head, which I used to always believe. And I still believe that my mom still has eyes in the back of her head. But anybody knows that nobody has eyes in the back of their head. Only Kadosh Baruch Hu has eyes in the back of their head. Maybe my mom has eyes in the back of her head also. But eyes in the back of it means that I can see behind me. I can't see what's behind me. You can't see what's behind me. The only thing that I can see is what I believe. You ever go on an airplane somewhere where you've never been before? I'm sure there's been a time. You've been somewhere. You've traveled and you went somewhere, but you've never been there before. If you think about the logic of that, the intellectual logic of that, that means, what's an airplane? An airplane is an aluminum tin can that goes hundreds of miles an hour, 500 miles an hour, ungodly speed, like a rocket ship, zooms up in the air. Now, if anybody's ever been in a cockpit, I don't know about you, when I go into the cockpit with my kids, I myself quiz the pilots. Did you get enough sleep? Did you have enough, a cup of coffee? Did you get into a fight with your spouse? It looked like a video game. I'm thinking to myself, like, do you know what you're doing here? Like, it's not like a car, which was, so you're in an aluminum tin can. It's going 500 miles an hour. You're at 37,000 feet in the air. You're hanging in the clouds. We've reached our cruising altitude at 37,000 feet. 37,000 feet. I'm terrified. Are you kidding? An aluminum tin can? And then there's some turbulence, and you're going to go to a place that you've never gone before? Ladies and gentlemen, this is Captain speaking. The destination that we were intending to go, we just found out. We did a little bit of Google search, a little Waze, a little roadmap finding. Doesn't exist. You're like, oh, why didn't I think about that before I got into it? Why did I risk my life? And the answer is air travel is not risking your life. And B, is this a way to verify the truth? And even if you don't know, you know. You figure it out. That's the answer, which is that even though I might not necessarily know how it's all going to work out, I have reliable evidence. I have existential evidence that I'm able to rely on, that I'm able to have my belief dependent on. And therefore, I know that the destination that I'm going is a place that exists. I know that when I get on that airplane, even though I've never been there before, I know that I'm going to get there. I know that it's safe. Why? Because it's been proven, tried, and tested. Allah has kama v'kama, all the more so with God. Kadosh Baruch Hu promises us the land. God promises to be with us in our midst. As long as we follow his ways, we're subservient to his commandments, and we live as we must. So God is with us. Kadosh Baruch Hu b'chvodo v'atzmo is with us, travels with us. Api Hashem Yisrael, Api Hashem Yachanu, we learned in last week's parasha, by the word of his way do we encamp, by the word of his way do we travel. It's essential. And that is the one clear, indisputable reality. If we put our minds to it, if we believe in ourselves, we believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we learn to believe in one another, then we'll be successful. And that, he says again, is they were unable to conjure up this vision. They're now stuck. They're mired. That's their sin. That's their chait. They're unable to see beyond their current realities. They're only able to see what's right in front of their eyes. They're unable to create a plan. They're not able to have hope. They're not able to have a tikva, an optimistic outlook. They're unable to see with their heart, their soul. Too often we give up on meaningful personal goals and aspirations because their actualization is fraught with challenge and adversity. We just don't know how it's going to work out. We have no idea how it's going to be. So if we don't know how it's going to be, so then we give up. Because there's challenges. There's no way I'll be able to complete this. There's no way I'll be able to complete that. There's no way I'll be able to accomplish and achieve what those things I set out to achieve. And so therefore we live worlds and lives that are mediocre at best. We're not the best version of ourselves because we have challenges. We have business challenges, financial challenges, marital challenges, relationship challenges, spiritual challenges, communal challenges, personality challenges. We have to figure out how to overcome them. We have to figure out how to deal with them. These are the giants that stand between us and the realization of our dreams. They're giants there. They're giants. They're the children, the offspring of the giant. Who's the giant? The giant is the giant that stands in the stead, in the way of, in between us and the fulfillment and the realization of our dreams. We can't see a way around the difficulties and feel that we may be better served going back to our personal Egypt, the land of mediocrity, the land of underperformance. And so therefore, we can't see around the difficulties. And so therefore, what are we going to do? Let's go back to Egypt. That's what they say. That's what they say. You know what? We can't do this. Let's go back to Egypt. Go back to Egypt? You guys drunk? You guys totally lost? Go back to Egypt, the place of slavery and mediocrity, the place of underachievement, the place of underperformance, the place where you were decimated, where the land was decimated, the place where you had slavery for 210 years. And so we understand this. Kalev's words are a rallying cry for every Jew. Ki yachol nuchal lo. That we can do it. We have to find the strength and we have to find the courage to create a vision of success, a vision of accomplishment. When we embark on a life initiative, we have to begin by visualizing what that success is going to look like. Like, how will that look? How will I look in 5 years? We have to believe in ourselves. We have to believe that we can rise to the occasion and accomplish what we know we must do, what we know we can do. I see myself as a Ben Torah. I see myself who can read Hebrew. I see myself who can be participatory in a community. I see myself who's a Ma'uri of Im Habrios, is able to connect to people in a different way. Our ancestors, they chose to ignore Kalev and admitted defeat in the face of the giants. In the face of the challenges that stood in their way. And our job, Tavshin Pe'alef, 5781, 2021, where there's enormous chaos around us, a pandemic that we are hopefully, please God, Amin Hashem, fully coming out of. World chaos, wars, our land of Israel being challenged and being attacked. Inland, here in the United States, also, I mean, the security and the serenity that we once felt was not claimable in the world of challenge. And therefore, look what's happening around us. Ki yachol, nuchal, lo. This is the remedy. This is the tikkun. This is the exercise of how we can do it. This is what Kalev ben Yefuna is not only saying to them who are standing there. It's these words, these four words that are talking to us now. Ki yachol, nuchal, lo. You can do it. So the question is, how can we do it? How will we do it? And the answer is, there's so many different suggestions, but I'm going to share with you one. One very powerful answer. It's what I call watching the videotape. Was it watching the videotape or the art of visualization? There's an amazing book. And the name of the book is called Essentialism. And the author writes in great detail in one of the chapters, the concept, what he calls flow. Or he calls subcategory called the genius of routine. The way we're able to see something is through one of two ways, which are actually married to each other. The concept of the genius of routine, which has been famously said, is routine in an intelligent man is a sign of ambition. When you have an ambition towards something and you want to accomplish something, so routine is how it happens. I get up at this time. I eat this time. I exercise this time. I study at this time. I make phone calls at this time. I have a routine, right? When you have a routine, you're humming. You're zipping along. You're doing in life what you're supposed to be. The second you get out of routine, I have an exercise. You ever find yourself saying, I haven't exercised in like a week. Ugh, I was supposed to start my diet last week. I'm going to start. Thank goodness for Sundays, by the way. If you didn't have a Sunday, Monday, we would never, ever restart. Sundays are like restart. I call them restart Sundays. All right, I'll catch it on Sunday. I didn't do my routine. I'll do it on Sunday. I didn't help this week. All right, we'll get through Shabbos. I'll cheat a little bit more on Sunday. We're fresh. Sunday, Monday rolls around. You're like, I have a busy schedule. Let me hit next Sunday. Right? Routine is essential. Now, this is very important to understanding. Not just is it about routine, but listen to this, because the routine dovetails into the next part of it and seeing it. It's go to the videotape. Now, we know that for years, everybody knows the name Michael Phelps, right? Michael Phelps, Olympic gold winning champion. For years before the Olympics, before Olympic swimmer, Michael Phelps won gold in the 2008 Beijing Olympics. He followed the same routine at every single race. Imagine you did this. There's no reason why we as Jews can't do this. He arrived 2 hours early. That's a mishnah in Brachos. The mishnah says the Hasidim Arishonim, that the early pious ones would arrive to davening sha'achas lifnei tefila. Okay, not 2 hours, but they probably would go 2 hours also. Sha'achas lifnei tefila. 1 hour. We go 1 hour early. It says he would come 2 hours early. We should come 3 hours early then. He would stretch. He would loosen up. He would do a certain pattern. He would do certain freestyles. He would do kicking with a kickboard, 400 pulling a buoy. He did a lot of different races, different things that he did to get himself. This was every single day. After the warm-up, he would dry off. He would put his earphones. He would sit. He would never lie down on a massage table. And from that moment, his coach wouldn't speak a word with him until after the race was over. It was like clockwork. It was like exactly the same thing. At 45 minutes before the race, he would put on his race suit. 30 minutes, he would get into the warm-up pool and do 600 to 800 meters. With 10 minutes to go, he would walk to the ready room. He would find a seat alone. He would never sit next to anyone. He liked to keep the seats on both sides of him clear for his things, his goggles on one side, his towel on the other side. When the race was called, he would walk to the blocks. It was literally like straight, forward, straight. Same thing. There he would do what he would always do. He did two stretches. He first did a leg straight leg stretch, and then with his bent knee, left leg first every time, then the right one, the right earbud would come out, then he would take the left one out. When they called his name, he would take the left one out only after they called his name. He would step onto the block. Now, some people would call this OCD, but he did the same thing every single time. It was his routine. Then he would stand and flap his arms in such a way, and he would hit, and his hands hit his back. He would like do a whole thing. If you watch, and if you do a little like Google search, you'll see that he had the exact same routine. That's what the author writes in this book. And he says, it's just routine. It's my routine. It's the routine I've gone through my entire life. Now, some again would say it's OCD. He says it's his routine. I'm not changing it. And that is that. Now, his coach, a man by the name of Bob Bauman, he designed this physical routine which helped which helped him. He designed it with him. But that's not all. And this is essential to our learning to this morning. That's not all. He also gave Phelps a routine for what to think about when he slept, when he would go to bed at night, and what he should think about when he first would wake up in the morning. And he called it watching the videotape. Watching, this is what the coach said to Michael Phelps, watching the videotape. There was no actual tape, of course. It wasn't like a videotape that he would watch. You know, we remember the VHS, the DVR, when it became a DVR. We remember like the cassettes they would put into those players, and we would, you know, if we missed a show, we would be able to tape it and watch it later. Or we rented from Blockbuster, you'd be able to watch a show and be able to watch a movie. You'd be rented from those god-awful, those large things, which now today, if you show it to your kids, they're like, what kind of Stone Age dinosaur? You see dinosaurs also? So, right? So he gave him not only physical routine, but the videotape we should watch. There's no actual tape. The tape was a visualization of the perfect race. He said, I want you to imagine in your mind what the perfect race looks like. Exquisite detail. Slow motion, Michael Phelps would visualize every moment from his starting position through each stroke until he came out of the pool victorious with water dripping off of his face. This is what he saw in this visual, the optics, the videotape. His coach said, watch, look at the videotape. He didn't do this mental routine occasionally. He did it every single day before he went to bed. Every single day when he woke up for years, every day he saw, this is how I'm on the block. This is my stroke. This is how I'm going to flip. This is how I'm going to come back. This is me on the little champions board. I see myself as the winner. He did it when he went to sleep. He did it when he woke up. Not once, not twice, not a month, not 2 months, not a year, years, many years, multiple years. He saw what he saw in this videotape all the time. He did it every day before he went to bed for years. When this Bob wanted to challenge him in practice, he would say, when he said, push himself, he's trying to push him, he said, put in the videotape. And then he would push himself beyond his own limits. And eventually the mental routine was so deeply ingrained that he barely had to whisper the phrase, get to the videotape, get the videotape ready. And once he would get the videotape ready, he's able to imagine, to visualize, he's ready to hit play. And once he hit play, imagine you see yourself in such a way, you hit play, oh, I see who I can become. I see myself as a champion. I see myself as an Olympic gold winner. I see myself as somebody who can accomplish. Now, when asked about the routine, the coach said, if you were to ask Michael what's going on in his head before the competition, he'd say he's not really thinking about anything. He was just following the program. But that's not true. It's more like his habits have taken over. When the race arrives, he's more halfway through the plan than he's even, he's already through it, right? That he's been victorious at every step. He's already through it. He already sees himself. He's already on there. He stretches. He stands. He hops off the platform. He does each of the strokes. He flips. He goes. Now, we know that he won 8 gold medals at the 2008 Beijing Olympics. And one, we have to understand that these feats are extraordinary. And part of how these street feats are so extraordinary is very simply because when you're an essentialist, when you're a person who thinks about the most important things that matter, what you do is you pare down all the things that are non-essential, and you think about what is the most important matter. And part of the most important matter is for a person to think about, to imagine yourself. How do you see yourself? How do you imagine yourself? That's the lesson that we have to understand. The lesson that we have to see ourselves is we have to understand that it's all about how we see ourselves. Ki yuchal luchalah. It's possible for you. That was what Kalev was saying to the people. If you see yourself doing it, if you're able to do it, if you believe in yourself, then you're going to make it happen. Michael Phelps was able to see himself as a champion before he even got out of bed in the morning. And that animated his whole day. Does that mean it's easy to become a trained athlete on that high level? Of course not. Hours in the pool, hours training, hours in the base medrash, hours in the base at Knesset, hours working on your Shalom Bayis, hours working on your Shmiras HaMitzvos, hours and hours and hours and hours. But it begins with seeing yourself and all the possibilities that lie before you. And we understand that the reason why, as Rav Chaim Shmulevitz explains, that 40 days of scouting were themselves sinful, we understand, it wasn't just that the scouts were punished for when they came back and gave the report. They were punished for even before they left. Why? Because Rav Chaim Shmulevitz explains that the scouts, right, the Meraglim, they went out with a very, very negative perspective before they even hit ground. they thought things weren't going to work out before they got there. They didn't go on that mission thinking, right? Imagine you go on a trip and you think this trip is going to be very, very successful. If that trip you believe is going to be very successful, the trip is going to be very successful. And conversely, if you think it's going to be negative or a person has negative qualities, what's going to happen then? What's going to happen then is the rest is history. We know that as the Gemara tells us that there was a miracle that took place. It was a deadly plague that happened to the Canaanites during the period of the scouts' excursion. Why? So the scouts shouldn't be noticed. They were burying their dead. There's two ways to look at that situation. Of course, the scouts saw funerals taking place. They concluded that it was a place that consumes its inhabitants. They're burying their people. That's not what happened. Because Baruch Hu made a miracle that they would be able to enter into the land unnoticed because they were preoccupied. It's all a function of how you see yourself. And therefore, if you see yourself, the importance of living with a positive outlook, people in our lives, the circumstances we confront, to try as much as possible to find out all that is good about the people and the things around us rather than focusing on all that is wrong. Rather than looking to complain or find fault, we should instead be looking to appreciate and feel grateful for all of the many blessings that we have. This is true of ourselves, and this is true of others as well. And so therefore, what we see is what will be. What we see is what will be. How do we see ourselves? What is it that we hope to and dream that we can become? Well, we believe that we can be something. We believe that we can overcome challenges as they present. The things that stand in our way are really, truly challenges sometimes. They're very, very difficult. But the lesson that Kalev gives to the people then is as relevant and is as necessary today as it was then. Let's think about those challenges. Let's think about those things that stand in our way. Let's think about the lesson of Michael Phelps and understand this beautiful lesson of the Piazetz, the Rebbe. It wasn't that Kalev was trying to give them something specifically or material about how they would be able to do it, but we must go forth. And he explains that this is really an exercise in national development. We can just simply go forth. It's an important lesson for all of us because this is how we develop as people. This is how we develop as individuals. Their concerns were shared by him, but it was this attitude. It was the vision. Kiyachal nuchala. What I see is what I will be. Let's take this lesson to heart. Let's be uplifted by this parsha, by these very important words of our sages. And please God, live with those lessons in a very robust way and have a very uplifted sense of self, an uplifted sense of our community, of our people, and Amir Tzashem be a continued source of Kiddush Em Shemayim in all that we do and all that we say. I wish everybody a beautiful Thursday and a beautiful Shabbos Kodesh. I thank you so much for listening and for joining me for our weekly learning. I look forward to seeing everybody live in person together soon. Amir Tzashem, healthy, wishing you a happy and a very special productive day. Thank you, everybody. Have a blessed day.